Hello and welcome to this month's newbie session. I am Sunny. I'm Sunlight's Community and Social Media Manager, and I'm being joined by another one of your Sunlight mentors. This is Amber. If you haven't seen her in the app yet this year, Amber, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us about your kids and what homeschooling with Sunlight has been like for your homeschool journey?
Sure. Especially since this topic is about multiples. I have five children, and they now range in age from 13 to 25. So I have successfully graduated four out of our homeschool, and I still have an eighth grader. So that's fun. I would say that, I've used Sunlight since the very beginning. My oldest, we started with pre-K. And not that we haven't dabbled in a few other things here and there, but for the majority of our curriculum and all the way through has been Sunlight. And it's been a huge blessing to our family. And I'm hoping that today's this conversation will be an encouragement to other moms who have five or more children at home that they're trying to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I didn't even intro the topic. Thank you so much for
sure.
reminding us. Yeah, this is all about managing the multiples. It's one of the number one questions we get is how do you do this when you have more than one child, especially if you have a bunch of small children? How do you handle it? Like Amber said, she's got five with a 12-year age span there and has been doing it since the beginning. So you've dealt with multiples all along. I also have more than one child. I have two, but they're 5 years apart. So I've always done very separate things with both of my kids. So we'll talk about kind of the strategies that we've used over the different years and how we've done this with more than one child and live to tell about it. My kids are now in ninth grade and fourth grade, and one boy, one girl. So let's jump right in with probably the number one question we get is the baby toddler situation, especially if you're starting out homeschooling and your oldest child is in that kindergarten preschool age. Chances are you've got younger ones around. So Danny says specifically that she's been struggling with what to do with the littles during school time. Her four-year-old listens to reading with the older child and does some tracing letters and numbers, which works for a little while. But then she goes and bothers her little brother, who's barely 2 years old. He has a hard time. He'll play with toys for a little bit, but then gets bored with that. And she feels like she's either having a good school day and sacrificing time with the younger kids, or she's meeting their needs and not having a good school day. So what do you tell her and others in that same situation?
Well, Sunny, can you remind me, do you know how old her oldest is? Did she say that one? And there's a reason I'm asking that question.
She did not. No, she said she's got the four-year-old, the two-year-old, and then, those are the littles that are entering. So I don't know if she has more than one older child or not.
Okay. So I'm going to guess, let's just pretend that her oldest is six, because that's a nice even thing. I guess one thing, especially if you're pretty new to homeschooling or new to Sunlight, at 6 years old, school in total should take about 2 hours, maybe even one and a half. So I guess one of my encouragements would be not to feel like you have to start at 8 in the morning and give your undivided attention to the six-year-old until noon or something like that, right? And so the way I tried to conquer some of this is breakfast time would be a time to get something done. Because I would have my four-year-old in like a little youth chair, maybe with some kind of a secure fastener, you know, so they weren't off doing whatever they want. The two-year-old in the high chair. And I would, of course, they're eating, but I would also read to them while they're eating. And that was something I did during breakfast and lunch. So we could knock out history or science. And then a read aloud during lunch, and that would keep everybody involved and they were hearing. The other thing is, I am a firm believer in some alone time for small children. So one thing that parents of multiples can often feel is a lot of guilt, like they're so busy with the oldest that the youngers are getting the short stick, or they're so focused on keeping the little ones occupied that they're failing the older ones. And so we need to tell ourselves the truth about this. Children need time alone, and they need time on their own to explore their world in a safe environment. And so when mine were under two, if I had a play pen or even a pack and play, depending on the age, they would spend, and I would set a timer for 20 minutes. It wasn't like they're in a pack and play for 2 hours or something, but a little time after breakfast of alone time with music going and a couple books or something. So I could focus on maybe a little bit of math with the older one at the table. And the four-year-old maybe is in their room with a gate across the door. So they know I'm not trapped in here, like the door is shut and you're being punished, but here's the gate. Here are your toys. Here's a fun story for you to listen to for 20 minutes while I'm working with so-and-so. So you've got them separated. And then there's time for you to hang out with them, maybe do some letters, whatever, while the older one is doing something they don't need your attention for, like handwriting or something. So I guess breaking up your day and nap times can be a time that you use effectively with the older one. And then maybe if the littler ones go to bed just a little bit earlier, or dad's home giving a bath, or you're giving a bath to the littles and dad can read to the older. So there's lots of things you can do to try to be creative about breaking up that day.
Yeah, I love all of those ideas. I was going to mention nap time too. That's a big quiet period where you can really give that undivided attention to the older kids. Something that we did, you mentioned the pack and play. I used to set up baby gates around our living room. Our living room is open, or the house that we were living in at the time was open right into the kitchen. And so I would block off that entrance and have a laundry basket full of toys that my younger child could play with while I was teaching my daughter. But he was always kind of in the periphery of what we were doing. So if I was reading a read aloud, you know, I'd say, oh, do we want to show your brother the pictures? Or let's see if he wants to see the book. And so, because my daughter at that time was in pre-K or kindergarten when he was very young, and then toddler aged early elementary. And so we would include him in school. It was almost like he was getting to play school with us. Obviously, I was not expecting him to learn anything or know what was going on, but he felt included because I was still talking to him like I was talking to my daughter. And so I got her a little lap desk and she would sit on the couch and he would kind of toddle around the living room, or, you know, as a baby, I could hold him, I could feed him while I was reading to her. And so it always felt like he was just kind of there. and so we did keep him around, but he was able to wander the living room, play with toys. He could be as involved as much as he wanted. And it really wasn't until he was old enough where he started demanding a little more attention that we had any issues where I had to kind of go back and forth. And with that, I would just, like you said, kind of split up the school day so that I'm spending some time with the child doing school and then some time with him and going back and forth between them. And it's funny because even now that they're both school aged, I go back and forth between them. I rarely ever teach both at the same time because they're both doing different things.
You know, here's another thing. I would often, and this takes some time and you've got to think about it, right? Like this doesn't, you don't just wake up one day and have it all mapped out. So I would say if you have time to just take a Saturday, say, have your husband watch the kids or a babysitter and think about this, I would do, okay, so Mondays for the two-year-old or the four-year-old, you're going to have high chair time with Play-Doh. Woohoo! Because you don't get the Play-Doh out all the time. For me, like that was special, right? So we have Play-Doh time, and the next day maybe we would have scissor time where they would just have safe scissors and got to cut. You know, I had a child that loved to cut things. She thought she was in heaven when she gets sit in her high chair and cut. So you can have activities ready for them, you know, those little bins of corn or rice or whatever that you can put in a special place, and they only come out for this 30-minute or 20-minute period on this day of the week or whatever. So it keeps it fresh and special, like you're talking about with the laundry basket of toys or books, things that they don't get to see all the time. I think it's perfect. The other thing is, as your kids get older, an older child can spend 30 minutes with a younger child. So in the mom's case that we're talking about here, it might not be quite time for that. I don't know if the six-year-old can be trusted with the two-year-old, you know, that it depends, but that's something else I did often. So you get a half hour with big brother and another half hour with big sister, and then you get a half hour with mom, and then woo, it's time for a nap. You get to go to bed. Anyway, it fills up their day.
Well, and I love that you said that because that just reminded me. I have a whole group of photos that I took when my daughter was reading a book. She was probably second or third grade, and she was reading it to her brother, and he's sitting on her head. He's, jumping on her shoulders. And it's this whole group of pictures where she's trying to read to him, and he's climbing all over her and being silly. But she was so excited because she wasn't reading her reader to me. She was getting to read it to somebody else. And so, yeah, I love that idea to have the older siblings, oh, well, do you want to show your brother or sister what you're learning? And, especially with a firstborn, I think they're so excited about all the things they can do and teach their siblings. And so she loved it. Just like, look what I can do. You don't know how to do this. Let me show you how I can do it. And then he was excited because he got to climb all over. She was humoring him and having a good time with it. And, he wasn't listening to the story, but he got to be part of the school day in some way. He was probably 3 or 4 at the time. So yeah, I love all these ideas that you're saying, because it's reminding me of those really sweet times that I don't think about often now that the kids are older.
I know I was going to show you this, so I brought a show and tell for our talk here.
Oh, nice.
So if you can see this. All right,
Oh,
so
how cute.
when this guy was in he's the one who just graduated, but when he was in preschool, this one, my oldest, was really good at crafts. So she would spend a half hour with him doing some craft that she came up with because she was into that and I wasn't.
Oh, nice.
So it was leaning into that. This one would build, let's do Legos or what are those blocks, Mega Blocks or something, because he was a little too small for Legos yet. But she would build junior Legos or whatever with him. She would spend time with him doing things like that. And then this one, who was only a couple years older, these two would play outside because we had a gated backyard. So they would do a half hour play. I could trust them to play together for about 30 minutes. And then after that, we had to be done, right? So you can have 30 minutes is your magic time. If they're having a great time, awesome, we're done. And if they're not, it's only 30 minutes. But while they were out there playing, then I could focus on the two girls. And while, the oldest one, then I could focus on the. So anyway, it takes some juggling. It is you learn to multitask. It is kind of a full-time job trying to think through some of those things, but it's well worth it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And we're talking about those little ages. It does get easier as they get older. I know I've said this in other sessions, up to about second or third grade, but that child's learning to read, they're learning math, whatever the older kids are doing, it feels like a lot because you feel that responsibility and that weight to teach them all these skills. But once they develop those skills, then it gets a little easier to say, okay, go work on your math lesson, and then you can interact with the younger kids. And like Amber said, even if you're doing it in 30-minute, blocks of time, or you're doing it during meal time, I love the idea too to have dad come home and read read-alouds or do science experiments. I know I'm not the craftsy mom. I don't like getting out supplies and making a mess, but my husband does science experiments with our son, and they love that. And they'll sometimes do more than one at a time. But that gives me a huge break because I don't want to do that stuff. And then he has fun time with his dad too. So yeah, any way you can incorporate your husband into it, doing read-alouds or doing experiments or hands-on history or any of those, kind of fun projects,
And Sunny, even if
it
you have
can be.
friends who are kind of in the same boat and you say, okay, let's get together, I'll watch the little kids and play while you, my friend, you with our older kids do an experiment or something. There's all sorts of things that you can, and it all counts. It counts. Maybe one more thing
Good
to
point.
encourage the mom who's feeling so overwhelmed with all the littles. Sunny and I talked about this a little bit earlier. Remember how you felt with a newborn? So overwhelming, like you're going to be nursing around the clock forever. They're never going to sleep through the night. They're never going to be potty trained. Like this is all your life is reduced to nursing and changing diapers and trying to keep your eyes propped open. But you know that that's not true. And after about 3 months, 4 months, you start to feel a little bit more like a human being again, and things change, and they smile, and they're interactive, and it becomes fun. And by the time they're about five, you almost forget what it was like to have an infant. That, if I can encourage moms who aren't as far along, or maybe have only been schooling for a couple months at this point, this is not forever. This stage is not forever. This is difficult, and it takes a lot of energy every day and creativity and wisdom, but this will not last forever. I promise.
Absolutely. And you said it earlier, it's totally worth it. I don't think either one of us would look back now and say, oh, I wish I would have changed that, because there are those sweet memories. And then of course, as the kids have gotten older and it's gotten easier, we're both glad that we're still here doing this and homeschooling the kids. So yeah, keep going. If you're struggling though, definitely reach out in the Sunlight Connections app with the community, because we've all been there at one point or another, and we'll commiserate with you. I wanted to move on to a topic though that we often see encouraged when you do have multiple kids, and it's a perk to literature-based curriculum, is that kids of a wide age range can still appreciate the same books. And we talk about maybe combining for HBL and science. Maybe if you've got kids close in age, they're even at the same language arts or reading level. But how do you determine what's easier or going to be better for those kids, as far as, do you combine, do you keep them separate, what should these moms be considering for the future, maybe when some of these littles are old enough that they're now school age too?
So one thing is, I would caution you, I was a mom like this. I wanted to have everything mapped out through senior year. I wanted to have it all figured out. I couldn't imagine, oh my word, people change math curriculums halfway through. What are you talking about? That is impossible. Ah! So it all sounded so scary to me. So if that's you, I'm just want to validate you and affirm you that that is a real fear and a real feeling, but it doesn't need to be choking. So again, it's a year at a time. Please take it a year at a time, because you and I do not know what a year holds. We also cannot understand how a child, we might have one child that grows by leaps and bounds as they get older. We may have another one that's a little stuck somewhere, a little stuck in math, and it's just takes a, oh, I had a son, he's very bright, but he's very verbal. Math was a struggle. So I hit third grade and was like, and so we just had to slow down math. You know, I have another with reading was a little bit more of a struggle, so I had to slow down. I have another that just zoomed off in all subjects and was just gone. Okay. So every child is different, and we've got to be just thinking about that and try not to plan too far into the future, because you think you have your 4-year-old or 5-year-old pegged and what they're going to like and not like and what they're going to be or not be. And it doesn't always happen, because they get older and you find out that that's not what they like and not how you, what you imposed on them isn't necessarily reality. So I would say this, remembering as a new homeschooler, the only subjects you really can combine, Sunny said this, but it bears repeating, history and science are really the two that you know for sure you could potentially combine. Math, typically your kids are at different levels in math. With reading, you might have some kids that are close to the same level with language arts. That is potentially something, but don't expect it. I think that's what I would say. So when you hear us say, oh, you can combine, don't picture that you can do everything with every child all day long. That's not what we're talking about. Because history and science are not skills-based. Math and language arts are skills-based. It's dependent on what they've already known and learned all along. So different children are typically at different places. So I had a situation. So my oldest, I kept her alone all the way through, because she was, she would sit and listen to me read an encyclopedia if I wanted to. She was interested and wasn't fidgety, and a typical, very typical female firstborn, interested in pleasing me. Was pretty quiet temperament. So we could just fly through school. My second daughter was much more hands-on, much more physical, much more aggressive, much more like ripping things apart. Well, no, things work. She wasn't ready. So she and my son, I combined for history, science, things like that. And I kept them together. First and third grade is when I joined them. And I kept them together until eighth grade. So when my daughter hit ninth grade, she was on her own with ninth grade, and my seventh grader. So at that mixing point of that year starting high school, then she was completely on her own. And my seventh grader, he was on his own at that point. I never shared time between the two boys because they were very different. So I had these two together and these two were separate. So by the time my youngest needed his own kindergarten curriculum, whatever, I was balancing three levels, but my oldest was pretty independent. So it wasn't adding more to me, and it was actually much easier for me to do it that way. So I don't know, Sunny, I don't answer that question completely, but I hope that's helpful.
Well, I think you gave great advice on the don't plan, you know, the entire trajectory of this child's education.
Yes.
Now, I think especially because with the Sunlight catalog, you see all the great books. I think we as parents get so excited to do the different levels.
Yes.
That we've all been guilty of that at one point or another. I saw somebody just today asking a question about planning for the next 5 years. And I was very much the same way. I remember when Level J came out, I was all excited. I don't recall how old my oldest was at the time, but I was like, oh, this is going to be great. I majored in science. I love science. You know, I thought, oh, this is going to be so much fun. My daughter, meanwhile, she's now a freshman in high school. She's like, what's the bare minimum of science classes I have to take? She just does not like science. And so as she got older, I realized, oh, Jade's probably not going to be a good fit for her. She doesn't like science. And she did elect to skip straight from H to 100 because she wanted to do more of Sunlight's high school levels than, you know, because there are five of them. So there's, with Sunlight, there's too many levels. You can't do them all.
Yes.
However, my son, who's still in fourth grade, so still a long ways off, he loves science. He tells me all the time that's his favorite subject. So it would not surprise me if he ends up doing J and we end up dropping a different level that she ends up doing. And so I've learned very much. I mean, I joke, but it's pretty serious. The longer we homeschool, the shorter my window of choosing for the next year becomes. And now I might loosely plan for the next 2 or 3 years, but I don't make that decision till about 6 months before the next school year starts. What level am I doing with that child? Are we doing 4 day or 5 day? Are we stretching? You know, because I made the same mistake of thinking my kids would be exactly the same. And my daughter was very much that advanced reader. She did one program a year. It was no big deal. When my son came to D, we had already done ABC. And I thought, oh man, he cannot handle the reading that occurs in D at the same level that she could. And so we decided to slow that level down for him. But yeah, your kids, I mean, I've only got the two, but I'm sure with more than that, you still see that they're all very different. I love what you said about even close in age doesn't necessarily mean they can share the same program. So if you're looking at it and you say, oh, all my kids are 18 months apart, I can put them all together, that may or may not be the best option for you.
Sunny, that's a really good point. And I was going to say this, my two oldest are only 21 months apart. So there would be maybe a temptation to say, oh, let's just mush them together all the way through. I am so glad I didn't do that. That doesn't mean it's wrong if you want to. But I also see a lot of parents with a young child who's very precocious. And so they make the mistake of pushing them so hard when they're little, instead of just enjoying them and letting them explore the world, they push them to be academically advanced or whatever. It's not necessary. They're going to be fine. And actually, emotionally and psychologically, they might be a lot better off if you treat them as a kindergartner or as a pre-kindergartner when they're four and when they're five. You don't have to pretend and push them into first and second grade, because they don't exist for you to brag about. Right? That's not why our children are here, for us to say, oh, my son is doing first grade work and he's only three. That's okay. Cool. Who cares? it's, you know, there are very few bona fide geniuses. Most young children, if they're being fed and watered and allowed to sleep, are very intelligent because their brains are making all those new connections and they can come across as really, really smart. And they are, but that doesn't mean you have to push them hard. Let them explore and see the world and read these good books to them and enjoy them.
I love that. Yeah, because I think so often, you know, again, we're excited, or like you said, we don't have kids to show them off. But I think a lot of times we're like, oh, look how cute they are. Look how smart they are. Look
Yes.
how awesome my kids are.
Yes.
But yeah, so the tendency sometimes is to push, and you know, those years are fleeting. So I love what you're saying about enjoy that time with them, snuggle up and read those books together, but don't feel like they have to be reading at 3 or doing advanced math at 3 or any of that.
Yeah.
So let's kind of talk about that too, what to focus on at each age, because you hear there's very wide ranges of thought in the homeschool community as far as, do we start preschool at 3 and really, you know, put them on that Ivy League path, or do we let them wait till they're 6 or 7 to really start structured learning? You know, what are the things that really need to be done versus the things you can let go? Maybe if you do have several kids and you're trying to figure out, what do I have to get done with this child? And, you know, versus it would be nice to get these things done, but if we don't get to them, we're not ruining their future adult prospects.
Yeah. And I want to be careful. Obviously, I'm not an expert in the sense that I've spent years, you know, researching and have a PhD in child development and all that. But there is a lot of research out there that says this is Christian, secular, it's all over the place. Read to your children. Children that are read to do better. They have a better attention span. They have a larger vocabulary, all of these things. And who knows, there are so many factors that go into that, right? If a child is being read to, they have a caring adult in their life, right? Who's taking the time to read. So there are a lot of variables, like there always are with human beings. But the important things, I think, at a young age, 6 and under, you're reading to them. You're exposing them to numbers and counting and shapes and letters. And that's part of your life. Whether you've got magnets on the fridge that they're working with, you include them in shopping trips and talk about everything you see. You're purposeful with them because you're constantly teaching. They're absorbing so much. You're talking to them. You're including them in your day, right? So reading and teaching to read is really important, I think. And that doesn't mean you start at 3. A child has to have some interest. Typically, a child will show interest. They'll pretend to read. They'll ask you about reading. They'll want to understand how it works. Take the time to teach them to read. 15 minutes a day is enough. 15 minutes. The consistency, I think, is the most important thing. So that sort of stuff, young, reading to them, working with numbers. Even if you don't have to do this formal, high-pressured curriculum in preschool, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, Sunlight's preschool, I think, is plenty. It's just enough, right? There's a 3-day a week, and then we do 4 days a week, and it's just gentle, sweet stuff. Kindergarten should be fun. If your kid is hating it and you're hating it, you're probably taking it way too seriously. Kindergarten should be enjoyable and fun and lots of movement and lots of interaction with the real world. That's really how I feel. And Sunny, I want to make this point. So listen to me, moms. You are not going to make or break your child's adult career or their path to college based on what you do in kindergarten and first grade. Okay? That's the reality.
Yeah, exactly. I know when you think back on it, how much do you remember from kindergarten
yes.
or first grade of what you learned, right? I remember
yes.
the arts and crafts I did, or I remember falling in love with a book that was read to me, or, you know, those
yes.
types of things. But yeah, I don't know if I learned any history at that age. I don't know if I learned any science at that age. But yeah, like you said, what you do at that age more, I think the only thing it's going to make or break is kind of killing that desire to learn if you
yes.
go too hard with a young
yes.
child.
Yes. And enjoying them, right? Because that's part of it too. I remember I got some really good advice, and maybe a mom needs to hear this. At least once a day, get on the floor and laugh with your children.
Oh, I love that.
And so if you just say, okay, every day I'm just going to get on the floor, we're going to wrestle a little, or I'm just going to be on their level. and just going to slow down enough to put myself where they are and just enjoy them. If you can try to pull that off every day for 10 or 15 minutes, doesn't have to, again, don't, it's not a Pinterest worthy exercise. I'm just talking about sit in the sandbox with them, play with Play-Doh with them, something for 10 or 15 minutes every day, just enjoying them.
And I love what you said too about talking to them. I think sometimes we live in our own head, right? You might be having thoughts in your own head that you're not saying out loud. But I remember when my kids were very little, I just took to narrating. This is probably why moms start talking to themselves, but I took to narrating anything we were doing. And those just talking to the kids, when they know that you're valuing them, you're interacting with them, but they'll start to pick up vocabulary and things like that naturally too. So if we were at the grocery store, should we get the apples or oranges, you know, and hold them up? And that's, you're teaching them without realizing you're teaching them, if you just kind of narrate your day with little. So I love all the things you're saying. It takes the pressure off. You can breathe when the kids are little. I know it's hard because you want to do everything. But what are some ways maybe to structure your day to make everything just feel a little bit easier? I know we talked about 30-minute blocks of time, but a lot of times when we're stressed about our homeschool day, it's a lot of it is in our own heads, or it's the way we're running through our day. But what are some ways to make that feel easier, to calm down a little bit, you know, internally, if we're the ones that are stressed or feel like we're not getting things done?
Oh, it's so hard. It's so hard when you have a lot of little people. It's so hard to keep that focus. So let me just affirm that for some moms and say, we have all been there. I know there were days where I just thought, I'm such a failure. I lost my temper for the fifth time, you know, whatever. And little things become so big in my mind, and it's really difficult. So let me think first of all, for my survival, I had to have a meal plan. When I had, you know, this going on, I had to have a pretty structured and set meal plan. And that included breakfast, lunch, and dinners. So we had a 5-week rotating schedule, things like that. So taking the guesswork out of meals was a really big deal, because I felt myself getting upset or a little bit angry because all of that felt out of control. So that was one thing. Another thing is, I think consistency is so valuable for children. So a consistent bedtime, typically young children wake up pretty early anyway. So you maybe knowing, okay, my children tend to wake up at 7. I'm going to have to get up at 6 and just have an hour to be kind. And be kind and wake up before I see them. I wanted to stay up late when my kids got to bed, because it felt like it was some time to be normal. I couldn't do that. There were years that I had to say, no, I have to go to bed at 10 no matter what, because I've got to get up at 6 to be available and not witchy. So I had to do that. So consistent bedtimes. I think the consistency of that schedule, like, okay, between breakfast and lunch, these are the 3 things that need to happen, right? We're going to get math done. We're going to have this. I'm trying to think of a few other things. I mean, obviously, this goes without saying, but it's important to say it. You've got to pray. You have got to pray before you put your feet on the ground. God, I can't do this job. I cannot do this job without your help. Please help me today. Please help me not to lose control. Please help me to think of creative ways to discipline and to train these children. Thank you for the gifts they are. That sort of thing to start off your day. So I don't know if that's exactly what you were looking for, Sunny, but that is really, when you have a lot of littles, you have got to be consistent, or everything will feel so out of control, and it just triggers so much.
Yeah, I agree. I think that routine, it's good for kids too, because then they kind of know what's coming, right? Like, oh, I'm going to
Yes.
eat breakfast and then we're going to do this. And at first, you might get some, oh, what's happening? This is different. But I agree with you. I think with littles, when they know, okay, I go to bed at this time, when I get up, I do this. Those routines, one, it gives them that security and comfort
Yes.
of knowing what's coming next, but it also very quickly gets them in a role so that when they're older, you can be like, let's do school. And they know what that means and they're ready to go.
Yes.
So,
Yes.
yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Another thing I would suggest, I find that if the environment is very cluttered, that is incredibly stressful for me, just seeing
Yes.
things out of place. So that was part of the reason that I always kept us in the living room too, because then I didn't have kids all over the house making messes that was all in one room. And part of our school day was, okay, let's put all the books back on the shelf. Let's
Yes.
pick up all the toys, put them back in that laundry basket that my son was
Yes.
playing with. And it'll only take you a few minutes if you do it at the end of the day there. But then now that environment is clean. So you don't have to worry about the whole house feeling like it's coming down around you.
You know, that was another thing I was going to say too. I don't do this perfectly, but when I don't do it well, I always pay for it. To have my kitchen cleaned up before I go to
Yes.
bed. Which sometimes there's just such a temptation. Dinner's over and you're just like, oh, I'm done. I'm checked out. My husband, Scott, you got this. I'm out. I'm just out. Okay, so in the moment that feels good. In the next morning when I wake up and come downstairs to the mess, I pay for it. And so that was going to be one other thing I would say, moms, to finish your day with some semblance of order to your kitchen, especially because that's kind of where you do a lot. And older kids obviously can help with that, whatever. But for me, that made a big difference. And then, Sunny, one thing you said about picking up, my kids loved this game when they were little. Again, about this size, 10-minute tidy. We would have a 10-minute tidy, and I would literally set the timer for 10 minutes and I would assign each of them an area. So Josiah, you've got the living room. Steph, you've got the dining room. Emily, you've got the hallway. Ben, you're with me in the kitchen, and let's make it look like a hotel. Go. And I would set the timer and we would blast some music and just go. And then we would take a tour and see how everybody did. So even making that into a game can be helpful.
Oh, I love that. That's so fun. Yeah, and I agree with the kitchen and get the kids involved early. I know Anne talks about she taught her kids how to do laundry at a young age. I did that with the dishes and, so that way, like the kids all, they just instinctively know when I'm done eating, my plate goes in the dishwasher and they know how to hand wash dishes too and those types of things so that it doesn't just fall on you at the end of the
Yeah.
day when you're like, okay, I just made this meal. Now there's stuff everywhere. And then as they get older, they get to that point where you
Yeah.
can say, all right, I made dinner. You get to clean up. And the kids are able to do that. So, yeah, absolutely agree that starting small when they're little, it's a great way to get them on board, but also give you that I don't know, it's like a restart for your next day. You're ready to
Yes.
go.
Yes.
And I absolutely agree with starting the day with prayer. Make time for that. I know sometimes it's hard. I'm definitely a night owl. I don't like to get up early. So for me, I'll say a quick prayer in the morning and I'll do my actual Bible study later in the day because my brain isn't really working in the morning. But if
Yeah.
you're not making time for that, it might feel like, oh, when am I going to have time to squeeze this in? But once you start doing it, you'll find you're just a happier person during the day. It makes it a lot easier to function.
Yeah. And God is so quick to give us wisdom. So many times I would beat my head against the wall. I had one particular child who I struggled. I felt like I was talking to a cement block every time I taught him, and I just thought, I'm not getting through and I don't know what to do, and this is so frustrating. And I would read articles and bang my head, and then, could you maybe just pray? Could you maybe just say, God, you made this kid, you wired him, you know what makes him tick. Can you please help me? Give me insight. Help me to know how to motivate. Help me to see him as the person you created, and give me wisdom. And without fail, I would have a thought. So I just think it really is important. There are times where we're just like, I'm just beating my head against the wall. Stop beating your head against the wall and actually ask the the God who made these children and gave them to you, ask for wisdom. One of my favorite things is Solomon, right? Standing, and he says, this people is too great for me. What am I supposed to do? You know, he's the wisest man on the earth. And he says, I feel like a little child. I don't even know how to come in or go out. And I'm supposed to rule this people. And I know as a mom, I felt that. I'm still an impatient, selfish child. And I am responsible for these five people. I'm supposed to train them and do all this stuff. So we need wisdom.
Absolutely. And real quickly, touching on that, I know you mentioned that we as moms sometimes are very critical of ourselves, or we think that we're failing, and that fear of failure is so real anyway, but especially when you're homeschooling. What do you do? I know when people are starting out, especially, there's generally you'll hear negative comments from other people, whether that be people you're close to or other naysayers in your life. You know, why are you homeschooling? Why do you think you can do that? You know, these types of things, which if you're already struggling, that definitely does not help. You know, I find as I've gotten older, I'm a lot sassier about it, and I know what I'm doing and I'm confident in that. But when I was starting out, I was not confident in that. What encouragement could you offer to somebody who's feeling that, and maybe they don't have a lot of support from others? They're already feeling like a failure, and now that is being told to them by other people in their lives. How would you encourage them that it really is okay and they can keep doing this?
Well, I think there's the reality. I don't know how many of us would walk into just your standard kindergarten classroom, and we could pick three or four kids out of that classroom and say, what is the teacher doing here? What is going on? Right? Like, so first of all, you can't base all of it just on you. You know what I'm saying? Like there's children, each child is different and they all need different things, and they're not all going to make us look good by the time they're 6 years old. Okay. So children need to have people who love them. There's only one thing, you know, in scripture, there's not a lot of specific stuff about parenting, but the one really specific thing is to love your children. Be tenderly affectionate toward them. Love your children. Take care of your home. There are some specific things there, but that's it. And it doesn't get fleshed out a ton. And so there's a lot in the Old Testament about being patient and all of that sort of stuff. But I'm just saying, as far as straight up parenting, love your children. So you have got to be confident in the why that you're doing it, for one thing. And you need to make sure that you're not, that all of your relationships are not people like that, which can be hard if they're family. You've got to just say the proof is in the pudding, and we're not done yet. Mm-hmm. So, okay. If there are deficiencies, for instance, if you have a child who is severely dyslexic and you are not able to teach them to read, you may need to get someone else to help you. And so I think as a parent, I always need to be open to the help of a professional or the help of someone, because I can't always see everything. So even for people who are naysayers or whatever, you can say, thank you for sharing that. There you go. And then you can go home and talk it over with your husband or someone else who is supportive and say, is there anything real about this? That's when I paused with math with one of my cuties, because he had taken a standardized test at a school, and that principal said, his score is low. You should think about getting help or slowing down. I knew there wasn't a problem as far as dysgraphia or something like that. So I thought, we just need to slow down. And I was right. That's all it took, just slowing down for a year. But if that person had said, please get somebody else's opinion or help, I think you need to listen to that, right? So also, some of you might have friends who you need to silence their voices a little bit and find other friends who are more supportive, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was going to say something that I always use was, well, these are my kids that God gave me to raise.
Yes.
He gives everybody their kids to raise. And I want to shout from the mountaintops how amazing homeschooling has been. But does that mean that I'm going to tell everyone else that they need to homeschool? Not necessarily. I think they should consider it, but it may not be what's best for their family. And so, yeah, whenever anybody has tried to say, oh, well, why don't you put them in school, or why are you doing this, or blah, 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 I'm like, well, these are my kids that God has given me to raise, and I feel that this is the best education option for them and for our family and all those things. And then, like you said, you can always say, well, thank you. That's somebody's opinion. I think, I liken it back to when you're pregnant and you go to the grocery store and everybody has an opinion about your pregnancy, even if you don't know them. I think it starts there and it just keeps going. And so learning to kind of tune that out. And like you said, Amber, finding supportive friends, if you don't have support from family members, or you don't have supportive, homeschool positive friends, get in the community with us, because obviously we'll tell you that we love homeschooling. But you need to find other people that are more like-minded that can speak life into that. And if you can find somebody a little further down the road, you'll get that encouragement, one, of seeing the proof that it does work, which when your kids are really little, you may not realize that yet. But when you see how well somebody else's homeschooled kids are doing, then it's a little more encouraging, I guess, if you're worried about what's going down with yours.
And the reality is also, Sunny, that you actually do have to homeschool them.
That's true.
Right?
Yes.
There is the school on the end of homeschool. So, sometimes I think it's not osmosis, you know. It's not, oh, I'm homeschooling and I have a curriculum sitting on the desk here. Okay, that's cool. But you actually it is work. It is work. It is time, and it's attention, and it's endurance, and it's perseverance, and it's not the easiest choice in the world. But that depends on how you define easy, right? So, I loved not having my kids in daycare when they were tiny. And one of the reasons, well, I mean, I loved that I got to spend time with them, but let's be honest, sometimes that's hard to be with our kids all the time. One thing that wasn't, I didn't factor in was they were sick very little. The only time my kids got sick was when they went to church, right?
The nursery, yeah.
With all those sick kids. So just saying, like, I don't know, starting out into this journey of like, I'm going to have my kids at home, I didn't think about all the fewer ear infections and sicknesses that we would have. It actually has been a very a wonderful thing. It's been a helpful thing. So anyway, there are just unseen benefits and joys that we don't even realize sometimes, but it is work. It is still school. Now, again, like we just said, young, I think schooling should be a joy, and it should be just a very natural part of the rhythm of your day, along with your other parenting, right? It doesn't have to be, like I said, I just have to focus on my 6-year-old for, no, it doesn't have to be that way. It's coming along. It's like the truest sense of discipling that I can think of in our culture.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you'll find, especially as they get older and you're more comfortable with homeschooling, that you weave learning into pretty much everything. And like you said, it just becomes an extension of your parenting. But yeah, that we don't go a place without learning something. And it just becomes a very natural thing. And I love that part of it too, because I feel like I'm constantly learning and, growing. And you want your kids to see that they're not done when they graduate high school or college. That's not the end. You keep learning your entire life, or you should pursue learning of some kind your entire life. And
There's so much to learn.
exactly.
So much to learn.
So many books to
Man.
read, so many things to learn. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, before we wrap up, do you have any parting words that you would like to share?
Oh, you said something at the beginning that I love. I'm going to show this picture one more time just for fun. This guy just graduated this year, and He turned out to be an amazing pianist. He's pretty gifted with piano, which is, and music in general, which is probably one of the reasons I felt like I was talking to a brick wall a lot when he was little. But this is not a child who took lessons constantly from the time he was little. We did not push that. It's like something God gave him, and he took lessons little. We moved, there was a lot going on. So he launched into serious lessons in eighth grade and just improved exponentially. And so he's doing stuff that I never dreamed he would be doing. I felt so many times like I was ignoring him because I had these three older kids. He was so happy playing by himself. Again, that's a little clue. He would play in the sandbox for an hour. Like, I would look out and I'm like, okay, he's still happy. Let's keep going. He loved being alone. He loved playing. He loved playing with his toys. There were times when I thought, this kid isn't learning anything. Why am I even bothering? But we kept plugging away. When he made it through puberty, his brain turned back on. Okay, this kid, I sent him off to college this year. And there was part of me that was so sad. I'm going to miss him so much. The other part of me was, God, thank you. I know from the time he looked like this, that I spent time reading to him, playing with him. I know it happened. I can't remember every specific detail of every day, but I know I have all my sunlight curriculum with all the check marks. I know the books that we read. If I wanted to go back and look, I spent time, I poured into that child, all of those children. I know we spent countless hours reading, and I spent countless hours, and I wouldn't trade that for the world. This child may not end up doing everything in a way that I'm thankful for or that I approve of or whatever. He's going to be an adult and make his own decisions and have to go through hard things. But I know that the time God gave me with him, I tried to use to my fullest. Look, I also can think of times where I lost my temper with him, and I'm embarrassed by some of the ways I lost my temper with him. I know that I had to apologize and ask for his forgiveness multiple times. I'm not trying to pretend that, ooh, every day was a party at my house. It was so great. Unfortunately, not. But I'm just telling you, looking back, I'm so thankful that I had that time with them and that I learned and I grew so much in my patience and learning how to deal with my own bent towards selfishness. God has used them to grow me, and I hope he's used me to grow them, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Well, Amber, thank you so much for being here. You always bring so much wisdom and encouragement to our families.
Oh, thanks.
So I really appreciate you being here, and I would echo what you say. My kids are not grown yet, but I've already seen a lot of fruit from that effort and that time spent from the time they were little homeschooling. So really appreciate you being here today. And if you're watching, make sure to join us for Homeschool Helps and Hacks. The next one coming up is October 19th. And so you'll want to make sure to tune in for that. And if you are finding, now that you've been teaching your kids for a couple of months, that maybe they need to supplement something along the way, we are currently doing our Boost the Basics sale through October 9th. So if you want to save up to 20%, maybe on some of those supplements, let us know. If you need help choosing those or placing those things, we can definitely help you out here in the Sunlight Connections app, figuring out what you might need or want. But this is the best time to buy those things. So I wanted to drop that in here if you're looking for that. And Amber, again, thank you so much for being here. If we did not get to a question, or if you need more help, just let us know in the app and we will help you out.
Please.